Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
You're listening to an encore broadcast of The Michael Savage Show.
You know, people are trying to silence Michael Savage. That's me. I need your help. It's a big battle, a legal battle. The opposition has unlimited funds. I don't. Will you please go to michaelsavage.com, contribute $5, $10, $1,000, $10,000. You'll notice that you can contribute to the Legal Defense Fund under a new address. The mail goes to the Michael Savage, that's if a check, a money order, cash, Michael Savage Legal Fund, 4 Embarcadero Center, 39th floor, San Francisco 94111. Thank you for helping protect freedom of speech. Michael Savage Legal Fund, 4 Embarcadero Center, 39th floor, San Francisco 94111. And God bless you for helping protect freedom of speech. So we spent an hour talking about Barack Hussein Obama, and I asked you a question. Why is it an irrelevant question? What is Hussein? Where did he get the name from? Why is it not right to ask the question? And I posed the question, what if John McCain's middle name was Jesus? What if it was John Jesus McCain? Do you suppose the liberals would be saying, what does that mean? Do you want to convert us all? Are you a fanatic Christian, Mr. McCain? Well, then it would become a question. If it was John Jesus McCain, they'd be asking the question. But is Barack Hussein Obama? How dare you ask that question? Well, so we're not going to talk about that anymore. We had a good time with that. We're now going to move on to beer, wine, guns, boats, beer, boats, wine, guns, cameras, stuff I never talk about because I'm so tired of the other stuff. I'm so tired of it that I'm going to do what is, you can't do this during an election season. You're supposed to only talk about, well, she's up, he's down. No, she's down, he's up. No, he's up, she's down, he's sideways. Okay, let the others do it. If that's all they want to do, let them enjoy it. I don't care what their ratings are. I can't do it. So let's go to the callers, okay? Chicago, Thomas, go ahead. What's on your mind?
Well, I wanted to talk about my boat. The first boat I had was a 1972 Chris-Craft with double Rolls-Royce engines, actually.
And wow. Rolls-Royce engines? That wasn't factory, was it?
No, it wasn't. It was actually a boat that I inherited from a wealthy side of my family. I really didn't even know what to do with the boat.
That is amazing. But do Rolls-Royce engines do well in a marine environment?
Yeah, honestly, Mike.
No, I would imagine so. They use them in the air. What am I asking? Of course they must do well anywhere.
Rolls-Royce engines is the most amazing boat. But at the time, it was a little bit over my head. It's a 38-foot boat. The maintenance, all of that stuff was just crazy. But when you said you wanted to talk about guns, I mean, there's the new SIG 9mm, single action, double action.
Okay. Oh, you've touched the raw nerve. I went and bought a SIG P-232 with a 380 cartridge. I can't use the gun. I don't like it. I don't like double action guns at all.
Yes.
Don't like them. I'm going to return the gun. No, I'm going to try and trade it back. I've never fired it. I just don't like the gun. I have, and I've had it for 25 years. My favorite handgun is really basic. It's the Colt Combat Commander 45. That is a weapon that is, I don't think there's anything you can beat it. WOR, Bob, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Yeah, I have a Glock 19. I'm an NYU graduate. I went in there as a moderate, came out to the right of you. But
how did that, you must have majored in engineering, certainly not in sociology.
Well, I took a class in sociology, and it was filled with communist professors, and they're really brainwashing, young, innocent minds.
Well, that's why there are so many suicides at NYU, I'm sorry to say. Why are they throwing themselves off buildings there? How can the kids take it?
I don't know if it's that or the tuition, Mike, but I want to talk about the reason why. I hear you like a Colt 45, and those are excellent firearms, but when it comes to home defense, you need a good flashlight, and I like a Glock 19.
Well, let's talk about it. Many people listening to this show are experts in guns, and many of them are not, and some are thinking about getting a handgun. There's something to be said for a semi-automatic handgun and something to be said for a revolver. Why is a revolver something people consider having by their nightstand as opposed to a semi-automatic? You could answer that very simply. Why?
Because a
revolver is a point-and-shoot gun. You don't have to pull back on the gun. You just pick it up and fire it. A semi-automatic, you're going to have to pull back unless you leave it charged, which I would never do with a round in the chamber. I would never leave a semi-automatic with a round in the chamber spring-loaded like that. I just wouldn't do it. But on the other hand, you know, a revolver is much more reliable in that regard. They're not going to jam on you generally. 5 shots, 6 shots max, as opposed to 14 shots, so that's a disadvantage. They say that the shotgun is still your best friend in a bedroom. Nice old shotgun, pump shotgun, best friend in the dark. 1-800-449-8255, phone number. Any topic is fair game. Guns, cars, cameras. You want to talk about cameras? Cameras have changed to such an extent that I don't know there's much to talk about. Everything's automatic today. I'm using a Nikon D70 that I bought about two, three years ago, whenever it came out. It's far more complicated than my little Sony, but the new gigabytes on the little tiny Sony are astounding. And on my website, michaelsavage.com, the pictures you're seeing so far are with the Nikon D70, but I have a whole panel of pictures coming up with my little Sony. I think it's a 9 gigabyte, small, the size of a credit card. I never saw a camera like this. But I still like the heft and feel of a big camera. Although, if you want to take a picture of a bum in San Francisco, I would suggest you get a smaller camera because you can get away with it more. You don't have to, like, aim it, you know. You can sort of, like, hold it. That's the better one to use if you're taking anonymous pictures. The credit card size camera is better. So what would you like to talk about? We can go back to politics, Hussein Obama, if you'd like. I mean, that's fine. Again, I raise the question, why is it inappropriate to raise the issue of his middle name? If John McCain's middle name had been or were Jesus, John Jesus McCain, would his middle name be an issue? I think so. I think that the liberals would have a diarrhea fit. They would go insane.
Oh, your name is John Jesus McCain? Oh, does that mean you want to convert us? What? That's frightening.
It would become an issue, I'm sure of it, the way Mr. Romney's Mormonism became an issue to the radicals at the New York Times. So that's why it was, you know, it was such a question. Let's see. What else do we have? Obama. Could you get pictures of Obama off my website except for that one article? You know, he looks like Alfred E. Newman to me with the big ears. He's not a very good-looking guy. I mean, I told you 1,000 times it's not about the fact that he's multiracial to me. I would vote for a black man in a second if he were a conservative. I would. You have to just take me on my word. I'd vote for a black woman if she could save America. I don't care what their race is. I don't happen to like the man's communist policies, that's all. I don't happen to like the bag men that have associated with him in Chicago. I don't like the fact that he has a nasty wife who seems to have a distemper for America and thinks it's only good now that her husband's getting attention. There's a lot of things that I don't really like about the guy, if you don't mind. Now, I recognize that many of you think he walks on water and that he can cure arthritis if you just go to one of his rallies. I'm not one of those, you know. So let's talk about boats for another minute or two. Tim, Sacramento, welcome to the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Thank you, Dr. Savage. I was wondering, have you ever touched on power cats? Because I know that they're really hot in Australia, and you can get, you know, you got a shallow draft, 4-foot draft on a 65-footer, and you can use a couple 700-horsepower Cummins. And
what is that? Oh, a catamaran?
Power cats, yeah. They're really popular in Australia.
You know, it's funny you should ask. When I lived years ago in the tropics, catamarans were very popular amongst the sailing folks. There was something about it that was not traditional that I couldn't relate to, the double hull. I know they sailed flat and people loved them. I just never related to them. To me, a boat has to have a single hull to be a boat. I can't relate to it. There's certain things that don't compute in my head. One of them is a double-hulled vessel.
Oh, yeah. I was wondering, what size is your Grand Banks?
It's a Europa 42.
Those are beautiful. Yeah, my dream is to have a custom-built yacht by Delta Marine or Delta Outdoor.
Oh, yeah, they're magnificent, gigantic, though. Well, you're talking about a 150-foot boat, though.
Well, yeah, well, they'll do a custom order. You can get a, like a nice 65-footer with an ice-strengthened steel hull. That way you can go up into Alaska, have a four-stateroom layout.
Wow.
Just take friends. Wouldn't that be fun?
Yeah, I don't know if I could take that much time on a boat anymore. I mean, I'm a day boater. Truthfully, Tim, I'm not an overnighter. I'd rather come back to my house, and that's about it. I'm a day boater right now. There may be a time later on which I'll do overnights on a boat, but not right now. Thank you for the call. I have one quick call to take, then I'll go to a break. It's splinter advice from Jeff in Houston, Texas. Jeff, go ahead, please. Give me splinter advice.
Yes, I was going to tell you, I worked in a wood shop, and what you need to do is take your one-sided razor blade that has a handle on one side, like the box cutter.
And cut my throat.
No, you slowly, where the splinter is, you shave the skin real slow. It might take you about 20 minutes, but just lightly use the sharp edge of the blade and keep rubbing over it and rubbing over it and rubbing over it, and you'll be taking little bitty pieces of skin off. You won't even notice it, but you'll see the little, it's like sawdust. And eventually, when you keep going over it and over it, your blade will hit the splinter. And you could just keep doing that and go under it and kind of pull up, and then you can pull it out with your finger. I used to work at a wood shop, and I did it all the time.
Well, I see a little black piece of the splinter poking its head out. As you were talking to me, I was playing with my thumbnail, and it came out. So thanks for reminding me to remove it. Thank you. I'll be right back.
Yeah. You're listening to an encore broadcast of The Michael Savage Show. To an encore broadcast of The Michael Savage Show.
Tucson, Arizona. Todd, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Dr. Savage, I was hoping to brighten your day with a good story. I met a lady in the parking lot that was listening to
Hold it now.
Radio.
This is a family show, sir.
Oh, yeah. She was listening to your radio program, a little French immigrant lady. And
yeah.
I was listening to the fact she was listening to your program, and I looked at her and said, are you listening to Dr. Savage? And the look on her face was like I caught her stealing or something. She looked up as she turned the radio down, and she apologized to me, and I started laughing. I said, oh, no, ma'am. I said, I love Dr. Savage. He's great. And she got into some stories about her French culture and coming from France, and, I mean, the praises that she had for you and how accurate you were and the way you described. You know,
why did she turn the show off, do you think? Because, what, she was afraid you were a hater of the show?
More than likely. That's what I mean. She kind of had that embarrassed, like, you know, she got caught doing something she shouldn't have.
Well, she sounds like a nice lady, also very shy. And how did it end up? Okay, or someone pulled a gun out in the parking lot?
No. She was kind of woman you'd want to, you know, go have a drink with and chat.
Hold it now. As I said, it's a family show. We can't go there. Well, how old a woman was she, Todd?
Oh, she was probably in her, I'd say 70s.
But she was French, so therefore the rules still apply.
<Very good.
laughs> Hey, thanks for thinking of me. That's all. 1-800-449-8255. It's a light day. Play another Bobby Darin. You did it already beyond the sea. What else do we have for him? Of him.
Every night I hope
what is this? That's not Bobby Darin. This is Bobby Darin? I don't like it. I'm not into it. Let me hear something that reminds me of a 57 Chevy, two four-barrel carburetors, fins. Give me, like, I don't know. Give me Danny and the Juniors at the Hop. There you go. That's it. Give me something, a real throwback song. I want throwback. I want muscle car music. I don't want to hear about senior sins. Makes you want to get out in a convertible, doesn't it, and race around? All right, turn it off. We're having too much good feelings here on the Savage Nation. I've got to get the angst going in order to keep the audience listening. I got to get them angry, I suppose. But I may not be doing much more of it. I am so beyond anger. I am so beyond rage at the political machine. I am so beyond wanting to change the Democrat or Republican parties that I could care less. I become apathetic at this point. I may change. Don't call me and tell me not to be apathetic. It's the greatest crime. All right, I understand that. I may continue to talk about Filet of Sol and my dog for a while and the red brick buildings and how I can feel the semen in the brick. I mean, S-E-A-M-E-N, the semen in the brick. It was an area where the semen were waylaid over the years. They go into their bars, get you know, knockout drops, next thing they'd be put on a ship somewhere. And I could feel this in this area, the Barbary Coast. You walk down these streets, it's filled with, like, art galleries, antique stores, a lot of lawyers for some reason. Thankfully, most of them went out of business in the last year, and the buildings are vacant. But they were formerly like little hotels for seamen and, you know, prostitutes, dance halls, that kind of thing here in San Francisco from the Gold Rush era. The buildings date to, like, you know, Civil War, post-Civil War period. I've always liked, even when I went to St. Louis, I'd go to the Gas Lamp District. If I went to Seattle 20 years ago, I'd always go to Old Town. I always liked Old Town. Old Town, Old Town. Whatever city I'm in, I go to the Old Town. Why is that? Like, when I went to Quebec when I was a youngster, I used to love Quebec because of the feeling of the old city, of Old Quebec, the paving stones, the Chateau Frontenac. I used to love shooting down that, what do they call that, where you go in like a sled, a toboggan run they had at the hotel? Wow. You get a bottle of brandy, you drink half of it, and you get in the toboggan. Before you know it, it's you're sailing along and you're having fun. What do you want me to do? Politics, food, music, science, poetry, global warming, how to care for children, vitamins, the care and feeding of children, as I say. Anything you want me to talk about would be great. I think that the time for liberals and conservatives in this country to come together and defeat the Islamo-fascist before it's too late is really upon us. Unless the radical liberal comes to understand that his greatest enemy is not the conservative, but the Islamo-fascist who would stone him to death, cut his throat, this country is doomed because a house divided cannot stand.
You're listening to an encore broadcast of The Michael Savage Show. You're listening to an encore broadcast of The Michael Savage Show.
Danny, on K Dawn in Las Vegas, go ahead, please.
Michael, I'm dying over here to hear anything you say positive. I'm a fan, but I think you're becoming a chronic pessimist.
Wait a minute. Is it illegal to be a pessimist?
We're not talking about law. We're talking about an entertainment show with information. I'm referring people to you, too, that I've referred.
Oh, well, excuse me. What do you want me to do? Perform for you?
Mike?
Well, what do you want me to do? Get a string that you can pull from Las Vegas?
Mike, a little bit of positive. That's all.
All right, why don't you give me something positive? Go ahead. You give me something positive. Some nice optimistic music for you out there to keep all your Republicans happy. Can do. Put your mind to it. Put your shoulder to the grind. Put your shoulder to the wheel. Make up your mind. You can win. You're a winner. No negative. Be positive. Think positive. Only positive music and positive news. Everything's good. Everything's coming up roses. Bush is not a liberal. Bush is a conservative. John McCain is a good conservative. Be positive. Turn it off. You know, the thing I'll do is I'll rewrite the Bible. I'll call it the Newly Revised Optimist Bible, because if you read the Bible, it's really very negative. Take Jeremiah. You know, Jeremiah, it should be illegal to read Jeremiah in America because it's so negative. It's not positive. It's not optimistic. For example, says, for of old time I have broken the yoke and burst the bands, and you said I will not transgress, but upon every hill and under every leafy tree, you reclined playing the harlot. Now, that should not be allowed in the new Republican America. The new Republicrat America should revise the Bible, change Jeremiah, and it should say, upon every high hill and under every leafy tree, you did recline playing the clown. And then the next passage says, yet I had planted thee a noble vine, holy a right seed. How then art thou turned into the degenerate plant? No good. That gets people in Las Vegas unhappy. So we're going to revise that into a newly revised Optimist Bible. And the phrase in Jeremiah will now say, I had planted thee a noble vine, holy a right seed. How then art thou turned into the happy clown? See, this way everybody will be much happier. We have the can-do spirit here in America. We have to think Ronald Reagan. We have to think pioneers. We have to think cowboys and Indians. We have to think conquering Hitler. We must never allow a negative thought in our mind because it's very, very bad for the economy. We must be positive. Arbeit macht frei. Every morning, go to work and say to yourself, work makes you free. That's what we need is positive, 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 I say. We're going to outlaw negativity in America. That's right, in the new America, negativity will be outlawed. And the Old Testament, particularly Jeremiah, will be burned because it is oh so negative. No Isaiah, no Jeremiah, no Judges, no Ecclesiastes, no Numbers, no Leviticus, no Exodus. Too negative, I say, out with thee, out with thee. Okay, I'll be positive. People have requested that I be positive. I guess I could try to be positive. I don't know how to be positive. Well, okay, let's start with this. This morning when I was making tea, I said to myself, your one mistake in 2007 was that you forgot to be thankful to God for all the gifts that you have been given. That's hard for me because I fundamentally am not that kind of guy who gets up and I say every morning, thank God for what I have. I should. I admit that. So I said, if you could wake up every day and say, you know what, look at what you have. See, I personally don't want anything. Let me start with me. I don't want any more success. I don't need another bestseller. I'm not boasting now. Please don't take it the wrong way. I don't want anything right now for myself. That's not what's making me unhappy. I'm not like resentful. I'm not like unhappy that I don't have this or I don't have that. I don't want anything. All I am asking, first of all, I wanted to say thank you for giving me what I give, because I told you how this happened. I don't want to go, it sounds hokey. Things had gone really, really, really wrong for me 15 years ago, no matter what I did. Everything went wrong in my life. I mean, in terms of career-wise. I was like a wildcatter. I had turned it into a family joke. I said to myself, you know what? I'm like a wildcatter who keeps drilling for wells and keeps coming up with dry holes. I said, but don't accuse me of ever having stopped throwing down those, you know, drilling. I drilled 1,000 wells and they wouldn't come up because the cards were stacked against me. Because I wasn't the right race, you get it? So anyway, but the long story is I made a prayer. I said to God, please, God, I've worked so hard, I can't take it anymore. I don't even want to tell you. I was 50 years old, and I had almost tapped out. I was ready to tap out and check out. I couldn't take it anymore. Because no matter which way I turned, they said white males need not apply. I got to tell you, on the MS, that's what I'm telling you. That's the way it was. Everything was like that. So then I made the tapes, and I said, God, please, just give me a living. That's all I ask you for. I don't want to win the lottery. I said, oh, please give me a living. I've tried so hard. I've done so many good things. Why are you doing this to me? And then when I stopped saying, why are you doing this to me, and said, only please give me a living, radio came along. Now, here's the interesting thing. It didn't come to me like in a lottery winning. You ask anybody who knows me going back to the first radio show. I have had to crawl on broken glass. I had to walk through fire. I had to jump hurdles in order to get where I am. Everyone knows that. And in order to keep this thing alive called the Savage Nation, it's an enormous, enormous challenge to do this correctly or as best as you can every day. 3 hours a day, like clockwork. Get up every day and train for it, run for it, eat for it, sleep for it, plan for it. Because if you miss that curtain call or you get into the wrong state of mind by the time that 06 hits, you're out of business, kiddo. This business is a business that you can die with one wrong sentence, as you well know. with all of the left-wing fascists out there trying to trip you up, because we no longer live in the land of the free and the home of the brave. We live in a different country today. We live in a totally different Soviet-style America. But I'm up for the task. I'll bury them before they bury me. I will put them in an orange jumpsuit before they put me in one. I will get them out of business before they get me out of business. I can guarantee you. I can guarantee you people have left the political arena who you thought would be around forever, and I told you they wouldn't be around. People have left this campaign who I knew didn't stand a chance in you-know-where to get anywhere, and I knew they were doing it just for the publicity. They're gone. They're gone, not with the wind. They're gone like dust in the wind. What I'm saying to you is there's a lot to be thankful for. But when God answers your prayers, whatever they may be, it often comes with a burden. It's not the lottery. You don't get X, you know, millions of dollars a year for nothing. You got to work it. You got to give back. So that's the whole message that I got to remember is give back. So I want to go through one more thing. I don't know where this soul searching has come from. I had reached a point in my radio career where, let's say, I was contemplating leaving radio at the end, let's say at the end of the year, when this year is over, 08. I had been seriously thinking about it for a long time now, because there's only so many years anybody wants to do anything. And I feel I've done what I wanted to do. I've written four books now, four in a row, New York Times bestsellers. That's a heck of an achievement. I got to tell you, I don't care who you are. I don't care what you try to do. You try to do even one bestseller. I did four in a row. That's like four Babe Ruth kind of things for a guy like me. So what more do I need? What more do I want? I say to myself, the family is okay. The kids are okay. They don't need me. I'm not working for anybody. Everybody's doing well enough to get through life. Whatever years I may have left, I said to myself, what do I want to do with the years that remain? So I was contemplating this for the last 9 months now. What do I really want to do? So I contemplate what people normally do when they retire. Unfortunately, I'm an inner city kid. I always have been in my heart. I don't golf. I don't play tennis. I don't knock people who do. The sports never appealed to me, that kind of thing. I found that they were too distant. They were too slow for me. I'm not saying you're slow or a retard if you play golf. I didn't say that. I understand the great skill it takes. It's just not for me. Okay, let's leave it at that. So what kind of sports do I like? What am I going to do, go boating 7 days a week? Like a yucca puck with a captain's hat? I'm going to ride around tooting my horn with a dog? What kind of life is that? I'm going to travel? I've done more traveling than any human being should ever want to do. I did it when I was young. I've been a lot of places, I've done a lot of things, but I didn't just travel for travel's sake. I travel to collect medicinal plants. The collections unto themselves are worthy of a life's work. They were put into herbaria all over the world. Unto itself, I never talk about that. Is it as good as Jonas Salk inventing the polio vaccine? No, but it's a significant little step in science that I made. What I'm saying is, I could do that. I could go back to collecting plants as a hobby, but I said, I don't really want to do that anymore. I did it. I don't want that isolation and loneliness on islands anymore, sitting alone on islands with people I don't really understand and in villages every night. You ask anyone who's actually really done it, there's no romanticism involved. It's very, very difficult, and it's very soul-wrenching to sit in a strange village on a straw mat at night, night after night. It's not a lot of fun. When you're young, maybe you can imagine it's kind of a romantic thing to do, but when you are at a different point in your life, there's no romance in it. So the point I'm making, in a long story short, is that there was nothing that I really wanted to do outside of what I have been doing for these last 15 years. And that is, look at the political machine as it goes by, watch America as it goes by, and try to make a difference. Now, am I imagining that I've made a difference? No, I'll tell you, we've had some real victories. For that little film critic with the insignificant show with no ratings who thinks that the conservative movement is dead, let me remind the little film critic that this show stopped a Dubai port deal. Does that mean the conservative movement is dead, Mr. Film Critic? This little show stopped the illegal immigration amnesty bill. We stopped it dead in its tracks. Not just this show, but this was the pounding drum of the anti-illegal immigration amnesty movement. Did you hear what I just said to you? We've had two or three really big victories on this radio show. And what I'm saying to you is, there are other things we might be able to do, both negative and positive, to save this country, to put it back on its course, to pray to God that somebody comes along who is worthy of the title president. It's possible this little show could have some influence on that. You say, well, are you being a megalomaniac? What influence can you have? Nobody ever refers to you. You don't exist, Michael. Well, go on to michaelsavage.com and take a look at the 49 million people who have voted on my website, and I can guarantee you that the listeners to this show will determine the outcome of the next election. I can guarantee it. And I didn't pick anybody yet, and I don't intend to, but I can guarantee you that the listeners will pick the next president of the United States of America. And I'm not even sure that that person is yet on the ballot. I'm not sure that that person has yet come forward. It's possible there's a person who has not yet come forward who will appear and who will tell America exactly what they want to hear, because that's what the American people are screaming, clamoring, praying, and dreaming for. And the people will rally around them like metal filings around a magnet. That's what's going to happen, maybe. And so, therefore, there are things we can do. And that's why I'm still in radio, because I feel that I can still make a difference. And that, ladies and gentlemen, is where I find myself today. Does that answer some questions? I really didn't plan on this, you know, soul-searching exposure today, but that's it. But this is good for the earth. The earth needs this. The earth loves this. The ground is speaking to me. Every plant and every bird is saying, thank you, God, for again opening up the heavens.
You're listening to an encore broadcast of The Michael Savage Show. Savage. You're listening to an encore broadcast of The Michael Savage Show.
Politicians are so full of crap. Here in San Francisco, for example, they banned plastic bags in supermarkets. They said it's bad for the environment because the plastic bags don't deteriorate or disintegrate. They sit in the landfill for thousands of years. They're very concerned about the environment in San Francisco, as I say, so... Now you have to have a paper bag when you leave a grocery store, and if you're walking out in the rain, it doesn't matter to the city of transsexuals who run the city. The paper bag, of course, disintegrates in the rain, and your groceries get wet. The plastic was much better and much more convenient. But let's take it on the face of it. So plastic is not biodegradable, right? Then how come they distribute condoms in San Francisco like M&Ms? Isn't that made of a plastic? You're telling me that the condoms that are so popular with the city transsexuals don't sit in landfills for 20,000 years? You see the hypocrisy and stupidity? Or they tell us that the salmon population is dying out, that the salmon here, we're supposed to worry about, that the salmon are not breeding. We don't read that the people are not breeding, only that the salmon are not breeding. So now they're going to spend hundreds of millions of dollars. Record low number of salmon reaching Central Valley could mean severe fishing restrictions. And they try to analyze why the spawning, the number of salmon that are spawning, has decreased. Nobody will say that perhaps the toxic garbage that is dumped offshore in San Francisco is poisoning the oceans. Nobody will say that the hospital waste and the other untreated sewage that goes out into the ocean is so toxic that it's killing the fisheries off the coast of California. Oh, no. Instead, they'll tell you to cut out plastic bags in the supermarket. I'm going to prove something to you right now. This is a daring act I'm about to perform, which is I'm going to read the label on a box of bullets, 380 auto 90 grain bullets, and I'm going to show you that I can even make that interesting, even the people who don't have guns. I'm going to read you something, right? Lead warning. Discharging firearms in poorly ventilated areas, cleaning firearms, or handling ammunition may result in exposure to lead and other substances known to cause birth defects and reproductive harm. Well, a bullet can also cure a birth defect, to be honest with you, when you think about it. Why it's in English and French, I don't understand. Why would they make a bullet box in French and English? That's the part I can't understand. The French haven't used guns in 100 years. How many Frenchmen would buy centerfire cartridges? I know there's a warning here for children on the box. French, they're not allowed to have guns in France, are they? So why would they even make this in France? I don't understand this. This is like a cheap centerfire cartridge, maybe. It could be in Louisiana or something if they speak French, don't they, down in there in the bayou? I mean, no slur intended. 380 is a terrible round, by the way, for home defense. I don't think it'll work. Everyone says, oh, it's not going to work. God, I wouldn't want to be hit by one. Guys always say, oh, don't get a 380, get a 40. But man, I don't want that thing going through me. What's wrong with the 380? Like a 32 is not good enough. Oh, okay, fine. I'll just shoot it through my splinter. It's not big enough. I'm into the 45. I mean, you want your stopping power. I mean, in the case of a home defense weapon, let me tell you something, size matters when it comes to the cartridge. You know, I mean, let's not fool around here. You got a guy coming in on PCP, you want something that'll knock him down, and it's got to be a 45. I don't care how big he is. I don't care what drug he's on. That's what it's designed for by the U.S. government. When they were in the Spanish campaign, the Philippines campaign, the Spanish-American War, wasn't it? And they were having – you know, this is an interesting thing historically because I've studied this occasionally and only on a mild note, on a minor note. But apparently, weren't they fighting Muslim separatists in the Philippines during the Spanish-American War as well, if I remember correctly? And weren't these fanatics using some kind of drugs in the jungles there? And they'd come screaming at the U.S. Marines, and no matter what they shot them with, the 38s, they'd keep coming with their machetes or bolo knives. So they went back and they said to the ballistics laboratory, develop a slug that'll stop them no matter what they're on. They came up with the 45. That was the development of the origin and development of the 45. You understand that? A straighter gun. There is. I mean, that gun shoots straight. Real men. You remember that one? Real men. What was the one I said, Beowulf? Real men don't what? Early effort. Yeah, real. We can talk about guns, beer, wine, guns, cameras, ammunition. I'd rather avoid politics for a few moments. And remember, not truffles. The only topic I don't want to talk about is truffles. Conservatives do not eat truffles. Real men do not eat truffles. Houston, Texas. Russell, quickly, fire away. You own a Duffy boat. Tell me about it. Do you like it?
The great thing about it is when you're just putting around the harbor or in and out of a network of canals, there's no fumes. You know,
that's what I want. No fumes. I hate fumes.
You're listening to an encore broadcast of The Michael Savage Show.
Warning, the Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
You're listening to an encore broadcast of The Michael Savage Show.
You know, people are trying to silence Michael Savage. That's me. I need your help. It's a big battle, a legal battle. The opposition has unlimited funds. I don't. Will you please go to michaelsavage.com, contribute $5, $10, $1,000, $10,000. You'll notice that you can contribute to the Legal Defense Fund under a new address. The mail goes to the Michael Savage, that's if a check, a money order, cash. Michael Savage Legal Fund, 4 Embarcadero Center, 39th floor, San Francisco 94111. Thank you for helping protect freedom of speech. Michael Savage Legal Fund, 4 Embarcadero Center, 39th floor, San Francisco 94111. And God bless you for helping protect freedom of speech. I feel like I'm under siege in a bunker listening to this every day. I'm in a sweat. My dog is nervous. The dog is sick of throwing up from the tension. I know dogs pick it up from owners. He doesn't eat. He's moping around. His hair is matted. I'm trying to do the best I can for him. I don't know what it is. I think it's the politics of the day. Gas is through the ceiling. Maybe the dog's nervous when he sees me go to the gas station, and it looks like I just lost at Las Vegas. I filled the tank. Okay, thank you. It's $109. You know, I feel as though I'm in a bad movie from France from the 1950s where I'm paying in old francs by the liter. That's what it looks like. The thing spins around. like a roulette, around and around. And then where's this going to end? A government's supposed to rein in an industry that has a monopoly, isn't it? Never mind what the golfer says to you. This guy's a straight-up mouthpiece for the oil industry and for the Bush administration and Republicans in general. Free market. How can you have a free market, Rush, when there's a monopoly? What are you talking about? If you don't like what the Seven Sisters do? You go drill your own well? What are you, crazy? You people buy into that rubbish? It's no free market. It's a monopoly. A government's supposed to stop monopolies. The oil companies are a monopoly. OPEC is a monopoly. Make no mistake about it. And we do have options. We could go on to a crash program right now. Again, they're not asking them, one of the smartest men in the world, what the solution is. Oil for illegals. Make Mexico pump the oil, and we could take it from Mexico one barrel per illegal per day. That's 20 to 30 million barrels of oil to pay for the huge social costs of the illegal aliens. It's irrespective of whether you are for or against illegal immigration. I don't know how anybody could be for it unless they're benefiting from the cheap labor. Okay? No sovereign nation on earth has ever permitted this kind of influx, this kind of invasion. No country on earth has ever permitted it that is still standing. The only time this kind of invasion has occurred is after a war, when the country loses. They let 30 million people from another country come in and reproduce and become citizens. That's after they lost the war. But with politicians like we have, we don't have to lose a war. You want oil? Mexico's swimming in oil. You don't have to pump it in around the Straits of Hormuz. You don't need an aircraft carrier, battle fleet to protect it. You could truck it over the border, okay, instead of trucking in the other stuff. Instead of, I have to speak in code here, like the white and the black. Instead of trucking in the white, truck in the black. Okay, you know where that's coming from? Put that on your superhighway right to Texaco's gas station. Get the oil to the refineries. Get thee to a refinery, if you don't mind. Number two in the crash program, drill in Anwar. Anyone doesn't want you drilling in Anwar, arrest them. It's a national emergency. Period, end of story. The Caribou will thank you. I remember when the Alaskan pipeline was being built in the early 70s, this same hysterical nonsense about it'll kill the caribou. Their migration patterns require that they migrate across these vast, pristine regions of Alaska. And if you build the pipeline above ground to pump that hot, disgusting oil out of the earth of Alaska, you will disrupt the migratory patterns of the caribou. Well, actually, if you have studied this recently, you'll find out that the caribou, meaning the moose, they love the pipeline because it's warm, and they never really wanted to live up there because of global cooling. They had to grow a lot of fur and adapt to the cold. They probably originally were deer. Then global cooling hit, and those who could live had longer fur. And then they mated. The ones with the long fur mated with the other guys with long fur. The girls, remember that baby with long fur, the woman with the short fur died, survival of the fittest. Now we are a millennia later, and we have moose. And the moose don't really like the cold. They actually would rather live in Florida. But they had no choice about it. The world changed underneath their tusks. Underneath their antlers. So what you have now is caribou who really would rather be around warm. So they actually congregate around the Alaskan oil pipeline that we were told would kill them and disrupt their migratory patterns. In fact, they like to reproduce under the heat, man. Ask yourself a question. Where would you rather do it, in the snow or under a hot pipeline? So the same with the caribou. They're not stupid. If a guy wants to get down with his old lady moose, he's going to do it around something in a warm place. So where's he going to go to do that? The pipeline. So we've actually created a larger population of caribou as a result of this oil pipeline running through Alaska. I'm telling you, I have a great memory for the big things. You understand what I just said to you? Do you have that or not? Do you get that picture? So what I'm saying to you is that's why drilling in Anwar now makes sense. Because with slant drilling, it would affect very little of the so-called pristine environment. And by the way, most of the people who are in favor of the environment never go to the environment. I actually do. And I'm actually a real conservationist, and I've really done things for the conservation movement over the last 30 or 40 years. They've done nothing but collect big checks and go to dinners. But I don't want to, put another halo around my halo here. What I want to tell you is that I'm giving you a program, oil from Mexico. You want to lower gas prices? You want to go on to a crash program like immediately, like the Marshall Plan, because this is war? This is a war against our economy by OPEC and the oil giants. And because Bush is an oil president, we're seeing the most egregious profiteering in the history of the world going on not only from the oil cartel, but also on Wall Street, because there's no controls whatsoever. He put a shadow of a policeman in the SEC called Chris Cox, another great Republican from Orange County, Christopher Cox, Harvard, the white knight. He waited all his life to get that appointment, left Congress and went to the SEC. And under his watch, there's the greatest crime of the last 150 years has occurred, the greatest crimes, the bust out of Bear Stearns, et cetera, et cetera. Huge fortunes were made and lost. People lost their houses, subprime meltdown. And Chris Cox is sitting there doing nothing. Republican from Orange County. Great, great, great appointment, Mr. Bush. In a sane world, the guy would be not only thrown out of his job, he'd be investigated. By the way, in my opinion, it's only one man's opinion. I never met Mr. Cox, but I know he's above the law. Absolutely. I mean, he's clean as a whistle, a Boy Scout. So that's number two. Number one, we drill in our number one oil from Mexico, oil for illegals. We get it for free to pay for the hospitalization, medication, and schooling. They don't want to give it to us. We send in the 82nd Airborne and we take it, like in the good old days. We become a country again instead of a patsy that they suck everything out of us and we get nothing back. Take it from them instead. That's number one, oil from Mexico for the social cost of the illegal alien invasion. Two, number two, drill in Anwar. It'll take 6 to 7 years, I think, to see a drop of oil. I don't know how long it'll take. They have to drill much deeper because they have to go on the angle. Drill in Anwar. Number three, immediately start pumping oil out of Iraq. That's yesterday. The oil is there, Jackson. You start pumping it. You put it on ships. You protect it with the American fleet that's doing zilch, nothing but training right now. And I'm sick of training, burning up gas with training. Okay? Get the oil out of Iraq. Get it over here. Get it into the refineries. Immediately get it in line. That's number three. And I can guarantee you in a very short period of time, oil will come down from the $4 or $5 a gallon back to $2, $2.50. Now, why do you not hear this on ABC, CBS, NBC? Fair and balanced, it's Fox News. Why don't you hear it on any of those stations? Because they're all tied into the same beltway garb. They're shrouded with the same garb as all of them are. They pretend they're different than each other. Now, you ask yourself a question. I'm going to have you ask yourself a question. I'm going to give you a savage question. NBC News has a ratings for the week of 8 million listeners. ABC News has a ratings for the week of 7.7 million. And Katie Coran Couric, who we told you would fail, even though the morons paid her $15 million, I knew she was a flop before she began, had a listenership of 5 million for the week. For the week? How is it that I, an unknown man who's never invited on a radio show, television show, never written about in a newspaper, has a listenership of at least 8 to 10 million a week, according to Talkers Magazine? That's at least, I know it's higher than that, at least that number. Why are people listening to my show? Precisely because of what you just heard, because I have ideas, valid ideas, that you will never hear on ABC, CBS, NBC, or Fox News. I didn't say they're bad at what they do. They're bad at disseminating their view of world events, but they're not good at giving you any solutions or ideas. I am different in that regard. And these ideas are so threatening to the establishment of which they are a part that they will not project these ideas. Now, how do you think a guy like the Leprechaun, who has gotten away with going from being an Entertainment Tonight guy to so-called wrapping himself in the flag and being a patriot, a wonderful patriot, how is it that Hillary Clinton will go on his show? Ask yourself why. Because he cultivated her. And the guy's all over the map politically. That he's entitled to be a chameleon. There is nothing wrong with being a leprechaun. And I've said that before. In a world of 5 billion people, a certain number of people are going to be charlatans and leprechauns. That doesn't mean they're bad people. It's just the way they are. I'll be back.
Yeah. You're listening to an encore broadcast of The Michael Savage Show. You're listening to an encore broadcast of the Michael Savage Show.
I had such a bad experience on takeout last night. I have to tell you about it. I like restaurants. Don't get me wrong. I will go back to them. But right now, I'm not going to many. So actually, tonight, I'm going to go to one. So I did takeout last. It was a very hot night. And you don't want to eat. So I wait till it's dark to eat. Now it's too late to do it. So it's takeout. I call it in and I say to her, okay, I want the frutti di mare, the pasta. I've done this many times at this place. I want no clams. I want extra calamari. So the idiot, the high school student taking the order, says, all right, no clams, extra calamari. I said, then I want a lot of bread. Then I want broccoli, no butter. I want Brussels sprouts, no butter. Boom, and I have someone go pick it up for me. An hour later, the food arrives. All clams, no calamari, and no bread. One slice of stale bread. So I was so upset. It was late. It was almost 10 o'clock. I started eating. But it starts to gall me. So I call up in the middle of eating with the dog looking at me. I can't give him any of this food, so I give him a piece of cheese, which he loves. We're sitting there in the dark by the water. And it was enjoyable. I mean, don't get me wrong. But if I say no clams, because I have to throw them out because I don't like clams. And I only like the other stuff, a shrimp and a calamari. So they give me the opposite. I call up and I try to explain it to her. It's a chain called Pasta Pomodoro. I mean, I'm not ashamed to tell you because it's too many times already the same thing. Too many times the same thing. And they have high school students taking the order. So I said to the manager what went on. She said, oh, I can't imagine she would do that. I said, yeah, but she also told the person who picked it up for me that there was no bread left. She said, I can't imagine that. We got loads of bread. So I said, well, what is she, crazy, stupid, a sadist? How could you run a restaurant like this? I said, you know, I'm getting so mad at you by you giving me these answers that I'm thinking of doing like the dry cleaner lawsuit where that – remember that lawyer sued the dry cleaner for like $8 million for a pair of pants? I almost understand what happened. He snapped probably. I said, if you keep this up, I said, I'm going to sue you for false advertising. If how many times have I said to you, no clams, extra calamari, and make sure you put bread in the thing and you send no bread? Maybe the fifth time in a row now? And I hung up on him. So this is what goes on. You know what it is? It's not her or the restaurant. You know what I found out lately? Nobody listens to anybody about anything. Have you noticed that in America today? It's in the service area, the service industries. Nobody listens to anybody. They don't want to hear you. They hate you. And it's not like my fault that I'm calling in an order. It doesn't make me a rich guy and that person poor. All I'm doing is ordering a schmucky takeout dinner alone in a house in an undershirt with a dog because that's where I want to be. Why can't they get it right? They always have to, like, give you something wrong. Is it the Bay Area? I want to know. Is this going on across America where no matter what you say to anybody in a service industry, they do it wrong on purpose? Nobody wants to do anything right. I've never seen anything like this. There's an anger. There's a subtext of anger by everybody. Is it any wonder that I take such pleasure in a simple creature like a dog? No. It's no wonder. Houston, Texas. Chris, you're on the Savage Nation.
I'm a proud father of a five-year-old, and I'm looking to get him a companion, a dog. And I want
you
to tell me the story of how you met Teddy.
You have to get him. I'll tell you, you could never do better than a small poodle. A miniature poodle, a 10-pounder. The little ones are too little for a child, I think. Like the 2-pounders, the child could accidentally hurt. But a 10- or 11-pound dog at full weight for a child, there's nothing better. This is like, I look at this dog sometimes, I think it's a living teddy bear. No matter what mood I'm in, Chris, as a grown man, he's the teddy bear I wanted to have when I was a child that my father wouldn't let me have because only sissies had teddy bears. You know what I'm saying?
Yes, sir, I do.
He wouldn't let me have a teddy bear. You don't need a teddy bear. You're to your girl. Girls have dolls. You don't need a teddy bear. But Teddy is a living teddy bear. Sometimes he rolls on his back, looks at me in the eyes, with his eyes, and I can't explain it. Dogs have ways about him. That's how they get away with not working for a living. All they do is look cute. But he's a great dog. That breed is smart. He's very good with children. He likes children. I've never heard a bad thing with him. Maybe he's a special one. I don't know. This dog was picked off the internet from a breeder in Tennessee, believe it or not, and shipped out by plane. Would you believe it?
No, sir, I wouldn't, really. Off the internet.
No, you wouldn't believe it. On the internet. I wouldn't know whether to recommend it or not. I really do think you need to look at the animal you're going to buy because you don't know. But let's just talk breeds, Chris. How old is your child?
5 years old, sir.
Oh, he's perfect for a dog. This is just the age. The child will learn that the dog is hungry like you, so you have to feed him every day. The dog gets dirty like a person does, so you have to bathe him and you have to brush him. And the dog sometimes doesn't feel good, you have to hold him. You know, because that's how a child learns. How do they learn otherwise? Otherwise, there's no way for them to learn. So I would recommend Teddy. I mean, you can't have my dog.
You're listening to an encore broadcast of The Michael Savage Show. Savage.
You're listening to an encore broadcast of The Michael Savage Show.
What's the worst year of my life so far? Never thought about it that way. What's the best year of my life so far? Give me a little Mel Allen. It's a high fly ball. I want to go back to my childhood. That's it. I want to live in the past. Oh, thank you, Mel. Oh, my God. Oh, my God. Walking around with a transistor radio, crew cut, haircut. A little kid with corduroy pants. Innocent. No sexual feelings. Nothing. All that was on my head was baseball, but now it's a different story. What are you going to do? What are you going to do? There's so many problems. Who asked for this? I should disappear into the ethers. White Hat, West Palm Beach, Jupiter. Maybe I should go to Jupiter instead of Jupiter, Florida. You know that most of America walks around like they don't even know what's going on. They don't know where Iran is. If you said Iran, Ahmadinejad, Hitler, they wouldn't know if you were talking about a baseball team or if you were talking about science fiction. They go to malls. All they want to do is Jingle Bells. Can you blame them? It's the way most people are, actually, when you think about it. So why can't I be like most people? Answer, because I never was. I've always had the weight of the world on my shoulders. Even when I was a little kid in the Bronx, they said, that one has the weight of his shoulders, the weight of the world on his shoulders. That one has the weight of the world on his shoulders. That one. They always said that one. Can you play See the USA in a Chevrolet with Donna? What's her name? Donna Reed. I want to hear See the USA. That's all.
USA in your Chevrolet. America is asking you to call.
That's when there still was a Chevrolet.
Through the USA. America's the greatest land of all.
And they made the, turn it off already. It's another time. You know, it's like Gillette, Friday Night Fights. Everything was different. It was a different world. So 2007 hasn't been too great for me. I wouldn't say horrible, okay? Horrible is death. Horrible is a family member dying. Horrible is a dog getting run over by your own car in the driveway. Horrible is the doctor tells you you have bowel cancer and 6 months to live. Horrible is an emergency room. So I'm not complaining, don't get me wrong. But I am in my own way. I am in my own way. You see the latest story out here? Bush comes up with a mortgage plan that will freeze certain subprime interest rates for 5 years. Now, on the face of it, you say, wow, how compassionate. A three-pronged solution to stem the flow of mortgage foreclosures. Now, let me ask you something. How many of these who are about to go into foreclosure are illegal aliens? Has anyone asked that question but me? Answer, no. The government, as you well know, was forcing banks to lend to people who were not only illegal aliens, but unqualified for a mortgage. And if they didn't lend, if the banks didn't lend the money to people who didn't qualify, they were going to be sued by various divisions of the U.S. government. Now they're about to go belly up, and who's going to bail them out? The very same government that said, you must lend money to them. Now who's going to pay for the bailout? You and I. You and I. Now what about stronger lending standards? Like when I was young and I wanted to get a mortgage, I couldn't afford one. They wouldn't give me one. Why? Because I couldn't qualify. Why couldn't I qualify? I didn't have sufficient income. Therefore, I couldn't buy a house. But you see, everything's changed in the new PC America. And so you have a socialist light government that said to banks for years, you lend money to illegal aliens or we will sue you. In fact, you can't even ask the so-called citizenship status of a potential borrower or we'll sue you for racism. So the banks were over a barrel. They said, but. The government said, we'll give it to you in the you-know-what unless you lend it to the illegal alien and unless you lend it to people who don't qualify. So now we have a so-called subprime crisis. And no one's talking about it. So Michael Savage again asks the question that's the unasked. It's a question no one is going to ask. How many of these people in a subprime mortgage crisis are illegal aliens? How many of these people are those that banks were forced to lend to? But it doesn't stop Bush in clip 31 from telling us we have to pay for it. Listen.
Some lenders made loans that borrowers did not understand, especially in the subprime sector.
Well, hold on. Some lenders made loans that borrowers didn't understand? Is the president fooling you? What's there not to understand? Now he's taking the side of the people who they were forced to lend money to. Could you do me a favor and explain to the audience through music why I said 2000 is a very bad year? And so in order to do that, you have to play three things for me in this order. You have to play Mel Allen, you have to play Johnny Philip Morris, and then you have to come back to me with a doo-wop song. Go ahead, see if you can
and
do that.
The drive hits the deep right field. That ball is going, it is gone.
Come in, Berlin. Secret message. Come in, Berlin. Berlin, come in. Berlin, calling Berlin. This is a secret coded message to the right wing in America. It's dip, 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 dip. If you read the first letter of each word and reverse them with lemon juice, you'll see what I'm actually saying. Come in, Berlin. Berlin, come in. Crazy leftists. They actually keep turn this off. I don't go for this. I don't go for it. Now, the first mortgage that this family ever got was my father in 1954 or 5. He bought a house for $14,500 in Queens, New York. And the mortgage, you had to put down, I think, 20 or 25% at the least in those days, right? So what did he have to put down, like $3,000? It was a lot of money in those days. And then he took out a mortgage, and then he paid off the house. He had to qualify for the mortgage, and if he couldn't qualify, they wouldn't have given it to him. And he paid off the house, and that was the end of it. In those days, my father wouldn't buy a car on time because he said that was cheating. Can you imagine the thoughts of those guys in those days? A mortgage you had to pay off because who had cash to pay a whole house off? Nobody. Unless you worked for some people on a certain street that you ate spaghetti on. But the fact is, nobody really that we knew had those kind of cash in the wallpaper in Belrose, Queens. So we didn't, and you had to take a mortgage. But the fact of the matter is, a car was another story. You bought a used car and you paid cash. Why? Because if you bought it on time, you were cheating. And you couldn't really afford it, and you were a faker. That means 99.9% of the people on the road today wouldn't have a car. I mean, you got to be crazy not to pay a car off, you know?
Savage.
Play the Hawaiian music. Maybe it'll calm me down for a second because I almost got excited. The dog's asleep. Talking with Teddy here instead of Travels with Charlie. Talking with Teddy. Not bad. He likes listening to the show. He didn't want to go to work today. He wanted to stay here with me. Wanted to stay on the couch. He knows tonight after... All right, they got the picture ready with that rotten music. He knows what's coming tonight. After a trip, I don't want to eat out now for a week. So I'll cook at home. And he knows when I cook at home, he eats like a Roman emperor. Whatever I eat, he gets. If I make a potato, he gets the potato. If I make a chicken, he gets the chicken. If I make a bean, he gets the bean. I try to give him more of the beans than the flesh because they got the chips they eat today. Had my first dog had chips, he'd be alive probably another 10 years, but they ate garbage in those days, the dogs of my day. They fed him kennel ration. I have nothing against the product. I think it was ground up horse hooves or something, and it was nothing. You never gave him a grain or a vegetable. In fact, I once tried to feed that dog a vegetable. My father yelled at me, "Don't give him a vegetable. They don't eat it." What do you mean they don't eat it? We eat it. We're not dogs. They made for meat, only meat. Don't you dare give him a carrot. Well, they like it. No, don't give him. You'll poison him. He doesn't have the stomach for it. God, the things they didn't know in those days. But I try to slip him a vegetable now and again to keep him. I figured he liked it. A horse eats a carrot. Why couldn't a dog eat a carrot, I figured, or a green bean from the plate that I didn't want? No, only the meat. The meat. The meat he likes. The meat. To give him heavy, fatty. Well, leftovers, what I leave over, the the greasy stuff that even I won't eat, that with the bone give him. 9 years old, dead, a heart attack. Even then, the hot dog even had a heart attack from the kitchen food. I told you, stiff on the rug in Queens. Terrible moment. My mother was crying. We came, well, because 9 years, you know, an animal. It's not an animal after a while. It's like a retarded child in the house. You come to love it no matter what. Animals are like retarded children. I'm not knocking them. I happen to have had a brother who was sick, and I love him dearly. I would have killed for him, and I wouldn't let anyone hurt him. So don't tell me I'm insensitive. It's usually you rats who never even lived through it who are the most insensitive pigs. But you're quick on the internet like a lynching mob. That's all you do. You losers in your undershirts. You bloggers. All you do is sit there like a lynch mob. You're all brave with your keypads. Everyone's no good but you. So after 9 years, even if he was a little vicious and bit me through to the bone, you come down and you see the creature stiff on the rug, on a green rug, unmoving, and my mother's crying. What happened? What happened? I don't know. He's dead. He's dead. What do you mean he's dead? Look, look. And she touched his legs. He must have been dead hours because he was already rigid on the rug. All right, Ma, get away. Get away, Ma. Let me see. And you touch. You touch not directly, because you're afraid he could be like in a fit and snapped and rip your throat out, because he was a vicious dog. You figured maybe he was like knocked out, he had an epileptic attack, whatever. So you don't right away touch the whole body, because it could be spring into action and kill you. You touch the foot like from a distance with your hand. So if he snaps, you only lose a hand, not like your entire your entire life. I'm just playing with it. No, you did. You touched the foot and it was rigid. It had the feeling when you touch the foot of the dead dog on the pad of the foot, it had the equivalent feeling of like a broom, like a small broom laying there. So what are you going to do? So she called it. The ultimate authority had to be called, yet he was still asleep. It was not yet time to go to work. And he gave the edict like Caesar. All right, it's finished. It's over. Boom. Called the garbage men. What? That's what they did? There was no pet cemeteries with weeping and crying and cremation and jars that people have. I'm soft-headed, too. I got a jar with the last dog with his picture. The whole thing changes. You go along with it or you wind up crazy altogether. So now I have a box with the dog's ashes in it. I'm sure the ashes in there are not from my dog. I guarantee you they gave it from a leaf they burned somewhere. Those crooks in those crematoria. Like they give you your dog's ashes. Oh, yeah, here's your dog's ashes, sure. They didn't burn a leaf from. They probably got it from the park. From a drunk parkie that set the leaves on fire when he fell over in an alcoholic stupor with a cigarette. And they told the kid, the half-wit from the neighborhood who worked in the crematorium, go get the ashes from the park, you roll them out of the leaves, the bum there, and get the leaves, bring them in, you're going to set them out in various dishes, the leaves, the burnt leaves, and I've got 100 dishes for you to do, dummy. 100? Yeah, today by noon, dummy. Go get the leaves and bring them and stuff them. And then each one you put the label on. Here lies Teddy, the dog that he loved so dear. Inside is a burnt leaf. But in those days, as I say, the garbage men came, and they wore in those days, the garbage men in New York, the sanitation department, they call it today, the garbage men, they wore brown suits that were made of a certain fabric that was so hostile. What would you wear if you were in a garbage truck every day? Today they look like Apaches coming off the truck with tomahawks. In those days, even the garbage men wore a uniform. Well, albeit it wasn't great, it wasn't designed by DaVinci, but I mean by Boss. It wasn't a Boss suit. Boss worked only for Hitler. They made a nice suit for the Nazis. I think they were Boss designs, if I'm not mistaken. Oh, no, yeah, the one with the big shoulders. They did beautiful uniforms in the 30s. Oh, you could die from them. Gorgeous. But today, they don't wear a uniform. Headbands, bandanas, tomahawks in the back of the garbage truck, speaking languages with tattoos coming off their tongues. You know, it's a different world. But at least today they don't throw a dog in a garbage truck. That's the thing I'm trying to get at. Who would do that today? Nobody. That would be dog abuse. I watch that show at night, like Miami Pet Police. They're like saints to me, people in that business. You know, they usually go into like neighbors, like poverty neighborhoods where they abuse animals like as part of their culture. They always say they don't know whose dog it was. He ran in. I have no idea. The dog is kept with like welts and the fur ripped off. Barbed wire around his neck, and the guy comes in, they get him, they figure he's coming back from an episode holding up a 7-Eleven, and they say to him, hey Jack, is this your dog? No, he just came in here. I ran, jumped the fence. What dog? Oh, no. Never saw him before. Look, Jack, he's got a cut. No, I don't know whose dog. Must be my neighbor's dog. You getting hostile with me? But the guys have a lot of guts in that business with the guns. They take them in. I really admire them today. But you wouldn't, even a guy like that wouldn't throw a dog into a garbage truck. What do they do with them, a guy like that, if one of the dogs finally dies that they use for a pit bull practice? Do they bury them? I don't even know. Do they cook them? What do they do with them? Where do they send them? I don't know. How do they deal with it like a dog they snatch from you after your yard and throw into a pit bull ring somewhere in St. Louis? And when they're through with it, do they bury it or? I really don't know the ins and outs of all of this. I'll be right back.
You're listening to an encore broadcast of the Michael Savage Show.
Savage.
You're listening to an encore broadcast of the Michael Savage Show.
Now, let me go back to Maui. First of all, I want to go back to my little grass shack in Kealakekua, Hawaii. Oh, and I have a good note. On Maui, you know the mountain, the famous extinct volcano? Haleakala has not been renamed Haleakala Akbar yet. Haleakala has not yet been renamed Haleakala Akbar. Thank you. It is still Haleakala. Turn it off now. They got the point already. We had a chef schedule for the whole time because they know I hate to go to restaurants. So for me, because I'm such a troubled human being and they know I don't behave well in restaurants, they got a private chef. Okay. Private chef first day, breakfast was good. No problems. No complaints. Actually, excellent. She did a good job. Lunch, a big bear of a man walks in. Excellent cook. He had a few little quirks, like a certain hum that was borderline, could pick up the knife and kill everyone in the house and no one would find you for weeks kind of hum. Big guy with a like if you asked him a question, it was like a huge hum kind of thing with a laugh attached that we all attempted to duplicate over the next 12 hours to see who could do it better. And we had each other doubled up on the floor because the sound was beyond comprehension. I can't repeat it, nor would it be funny to you. However, he was planning a gigantic dinner for us the first night consisting of so-called local shrimp from his friend, the shrimp magnate. Yeah, okay. Well, my friend, they're local shrimp. Meal of brick frozen solid, and he leaves them in the sink all day. Right away, I know it's Tomainville. That's to start with. That night, we came back to cook, and something happened on the phone. He had a speed out, and he backed out and drove over the keypad that opens the gate and sped away. And we were locked in. The gate locked shut. Soon thereafter, there arrives the girl cook, the breakfast chef in the group, and she said, he had to go on an emergency, I'm going to cook for you. And the eyes are ready, Maui-Wowie combo. Combo Maui-Wowie and a few other substances, in my opinion. It looked like she was like laid back for the night with her designated driver somewhere, and she was called in because he had to go away, and now she was there. Now, here's the weird thing. I come into the kitchen and she's there and I'm wearing a clean new yellow like shirt. And I said to her, do you have an apron I could put on for dinner? I don't want to stain my yellow shirt. She turns to me and she says, I like my men dirty and raw. That's how I like my men, dirty and raw. I said, what? She says, that's how you guys are best, dirty and raw. I said, wow. Now, there was another guy in the group a lot younger than me. I heard that when he reached into the refrigerator for a drink, she put her hands around his back and gave him like a rub job on the back. He got icky over that. So that was number two. So we knew already we're dealing with major league problems in the psycho department. But we figured, you know what? We'll have the meal and forget about it. I'd throw the shrimp over the side to the palm rats because I wasn't going to eat them. Well, I didn't have to bother. I didn't get a chance to eat them. Let me explain why. Because Maui Wowie, and what she's doing in the kitchen there, I have no idea because I left. I went outside to drink wine in the dark. Ready, serve ready, it's dark. We got the appetizer, the entree, Miss Private Chef. We hear her singing, and all of a sudden, boom, a crash, glass shattered. The entire shrimp dish, which must have cost $100 worth of shrimp, was on the floor with broken glass, unsalvageable. I didn't even get up. I knew what. So one of the other people, one of the young ladies, went and came back with the report from the front lines and reported that the shrimp were all on the floor with glass. And Maui Wowie chef was on her hands and knees talking to the shrimp, saying, oh, how are you, little shrimpy poos? Oh, little shrimpy poos, I'm so sorry. I said, oh, my God. did we miss a bullet here? So to make a long story short, it was wine, salad, and bread, which was better than the shrimpy poos, I can guarantee you.
You're listening to an encore broadcast of The Michael Savage Show.
Warning, The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
You're listening to an encore broadcast of The Michael Savage Show.
You know, people are trying to silence Michael Savage. That's me. I need your help. It's a big battle, a legal battle. The opposition has unlimited funds. I don't. Will you please go to michaelsavage.com, contribute $5, $10, $1,000, $10,000. You'll notice that you can contribute to the Legal Defense Fund under a new address. The mail goes to the Michael Savage, that's if a check, a money order, cash, Michael Savage Legal Fund, 4 Embarcadero Center, 39th floor, San Francisco 94111. Thank you for helping protect freedom of speech. Michael Savage Legal Fund, 4 Embarcadero Center, 39th floor, San Francisco 94111. And God bless you for helping protect freedom of speech.
Savage.
Yesterday was a day that looked like I did nothing. And then at night as I went to sleep, I said, you know, this was a remarkable day. What did I do? Nothing. So it started out on the beach. I needed to get some air, and I happen to live in Northern California near San Francisco. There's a tunnel you can drive through and be at the beach in 10 minutes over the headlands of Marin County. It's an old ammunition tunnel, by the way. I don't know how many of the people who ride bicycles through there know that, but the tunnel was built as an ammo tunnel for the military in World War II. So I went out on the beach. It was a gloomy, cold day, and I walked and walked and walked. I collected flat rocks. And as I picked up these absolutely smooth flat rocks, I remembered they were once hills. And I thought of myself walking as a spirit through time. And I said, you know, doesn't that take a little of the pressure off you to realize that these rocks were once mountains and that you're just merely a man walking through time? So, yeah, all right. So I got back to my real self, you know, the naturalist self. And after doing that, I went to an Indian lunch buffet. Say, well, what's remarkable about that? Well, I'll tell you what's remarkable about that. Normally, I go to these things and I eat the vegetable stuff and I try to avoid the lamb and I eat a little of the chicken, the tandoori chicken. You know, $8.95 all you can eat. I'm not a fat guy, so I eat a plate and maybe go back for another one. I got there a quarter to two and they close at two. Scattered a few tables talking. That was it. Everyone was through eating. I said, could you put more lamb in there? I was in a lamb mood. I never eat it. I feel bad for the animal. And I don't like the high-fat diet. I knocked off a plate. There was nothing but bones left. I'd been sick, and I really needed the carnitine, the fat, and the B12. I was craving it. I knew I needed the carnitine, the fat, and the B12. There was grease on my hands and my face. I took it in the back room so no one could watch me eat. I really wanted to enjoy myself. So the Indian guy who owns it, I saw on the second pass when the bones were rising in the plate, I saw the eye was going up already. You know, he saw a money loser. In the middle of the buffet, the phone rings. My hands are greasy. Now, this is a tough one. You got two greasy hands and a greasy mouth. The phone rings. I knew it was a U.S. congressman calling, and I knew I had to take the call. I had given my number out to his assistant because he said he had to call me about something. Took the call. Hello, congressman. How are you? Michael, he said, remember a few months back you said you would help combat vets when they came back from Iraq? I said, yes. He said, well, there's some wonderful combat veterans running for office, and I agreed to help them. And it was Congressman Duncan Hunter. We had a great conversation. And I'll tell you more about that at another time. I'm giving you a day now, a day in the life of Michael Savage. Went home, took a nap. Then I had dinner that night. I wasn't going to go. Then I went to dinner with two remarkable men. One is a very close friend of mine, maybe my only friend. He is an inventor, a philanthropist. His name is Maurice Kanbar. He drives me crazy. I drive him crazy, but we love each other because we love each other. That's all there is to it. The other man is a new friend of mine. He's a producer. He's a film producer, director, and writer by the name of Rupert Hitzig. He did one of my favorite movies of all time, Wolfen. Years ago, he did Electric Light and Blue. He did Jaws 3D. And Rupert loves my show. Rupert says I'm one of the greatest storytellers he's ever seen, and he's seen them all. He worked with Alan King. He's worked with really talented men in the entertainment business. And he says, really, you're unbelievable. When you tell a story, he says, no one can top you, except he topped me. We're having a pizza and a little soup and a salad. And he starts to tell me a story that I said, are you making this up? And I can't tell you the whole story right now. I'm giving you an overview because I'm going to get into each one of these pieces later on today in this hour. I said, well, what are you talking about? His mother and father, listen to this story, a short version. They had seven children. And then after the seven children, the mother ran off with his violin teacher and married him. I said, what? That's impossible. That can't happen. Now, how we got there was he said, you're a great storyteller. I remember the story you're talking about, Lido Beach, Long Beach, Little House, the half man, half woman, the Bronzes. He says, I grew up there. I said, you grew up in the, yeah. He says, my stepfather was Italian. We lived in the Italian enclave out in Long Beach where it was half mafia and half this. Half. So that's how he got it. He says, and then he like by on the side, he tells me the mother ran off with the Italian violin teacher. So I said, wait a minute, tell me the rest of this. Are you making it up? And I looked it up on Google. It turns out it was true. But there was more. His mother, who died recently at age 95, was one of the first pilots, female pilots in the world. And she's on the internet. 1928, the woman was a pilot. It's unbelievable. A friend of Amelia Earhart. I said, how did your mother, a friend of Amelia Earhart, wind up marrying your father, who came to this country at age 13? And lived on the Lower East Side and sold newspapers to pay for food and lodging before he went to Columbia and then became a famous physician. How did this happen? Well, I'll tell you the story in a minute. This is now number four of the day. That night, meaning yesterday, I like to watch movies at night. I click, click, click. Most of them are junk, you know, but sometimes you hit a good one. This was on the Sundance Channel, and it's a mixed bag on Sundance, 40 Shades of Blue with Rip Torn. What's it about? Well, it's a pretty amazing story that I watched. I was captivated. You know, young Russian girl, girlfriend of older record producer in Memphis, Tennessee, comes back to America. She's his live-in girlfriend. They have a child together, but they're not married. And he's played by Rip Torn, like this garrulous, you know, kind of well-to-do guy down in the Memphis music industry. And she's this stunning, you know, Russian beauty. And they really love each other, apparently. Well, it's about her affair with his estranged son who comes to town for a party. And the way it's played out, it's a purely adult movie. It's something that many people would consider very slow. But if you like this kind of movie, it's like reading a novel, like a slow novel. So that was that. Then I had a little nightmare at night. Maybe it was The Lamb. Maybe it was a mixture of the movie. I don't know. I had the same repetitive nightmare I've had for 20 years, came back in spades. But this time it was a box within a box. It was the same nightmare of me being stranded in London, not being able to get on a plane back to New York. And no matter how I tried, I couldn't reach United Airlines and there were no seats left. And I had no hotel room. Every hotel was sold out in London. Virtually, I was homeless again, planeless. But this time, the dream was I was awake telling everyone, this is the dream I've been having, but it's really coming true. I don't know why I had the dream. I have no idea. I don't know where this comes from and why. What triggers this whole dream sequence? That was my day yesterday, from morning till night.
Savage.
Peter, WOR, New York City. Make it succinct. Thank you. What's on your mind?
Yes, Dr. Savage, a pleasure talking to you. I just want to say that I'm a Vietnam veteran, and I can't wait to at 6:06 when you come on. I just can't wait for that time to come. You are your destiny. It's for President of the United States. That's the only destiny I see in this land. You are the salvation of America. And, Dr. Savage, you have to do it. I don't know how you're going to do it, but you got millions
Peter,
of votes.
Peter, I know this. I know that your sincerity is heartfelt. on my website, I think we have over 75 million people who have gone and said, Mike, leave radio, run for office. I can't believe the numbers. We passed the 75 million mark. I don't know how accurate this is, but I'll tell you right now, it's in the many millions, Peter, of people who are fed up with the two-party system. They know that they're both cons. But you know, Peter, haven't we seen in this election that without money, you can't get anywhere in this country? Haven't we seen that the system is bought and sold like so many pieces of silver?
Yeah!
You're listening to an encore broadcast of The Michael Savage Show.
To an encore broadcast of The Michael Savage Show.
Frank, welcome to the program from WRKO in Boston. How are you? How are you? How are you? What's on your mind, Frank?
How are you, Mike? It's good to talk to you again.
My friend Frankie from Boston. What's happening?
Well, I wanted to call you. I'm going to Italy on Sunday. And
God bless. You're a lucky man. You're a lucky man. A lot of Italians go in this time of the year, huh?
It's a perfect time of the year. The weather is about the early 60s to mid 70s, depending on where you go, and there's not
yeah.
much rain. So, you know.
It's a beautiful, there's perfect autumn weather before after the sun, right?
Absolutely, yeah. So I can't wait, man. I'm really looking forward to it. So I thought.
Where are you going? Where are you going in Italy?
Well, we're going to Rome. We're heading to Venice. Florence, we're going to the Amalfi Coast, Island of Capri, we're going to go to Modena. So we're going to hit the...
What are you going in to buy a Ferrari?
No Ferraris on this trip, Mike. Maybe the next one.
So do you have family over there, Frank?
Well, there's a town over there. I'm not sure. I might have family there. We're going to go to a town that's after my last name, so I don't know if we took the town's name or...
It wouldn't be Corleone, would it?
No, not Corleone. No.
So what are you going to eat over there, Frank?
I'm going to eat everything that I see, Mike. And I'm going
to... Stop it now. But what are you really looking forward to that you can't get in Boston?
Just the whole cuisine over there is different than in America, Mike, you know?
Well, I got a friend who owns a Sicilian restaurant in North Beach. I like eating there a lot. So he tells me that when he goes to Sicily, where he has a house, he said, Michael, he said, the people eat for 3 hours at night. They eat slowly, not like you. He said, they take course after course and they converse. He knows I call him in advance and say, make this. I come in, I eat, boom, have a drink and leave. He said, we don't eat that way. I said, I can't help you. But he said, we sit and we talk and we chat. They don't watch television. It's a different world, isn't it?
It's a different world. It's much slower. They enjoy life better, and that's why they live longer. So I'm going to dip my bread.
I wish I would be there with you, Frank. My traveling days are frankly over. I did a lot of great traveling when I was young. The kids were younger. I don't travel as much anymore. To me, being on that airplane is a torment beyond you know that poor woman who got, like, handcuffed and died in the prison in Phoenix Airport a couple of weeks ago?
Yeah.
I fear that every time I get near an airport, that if I say one wrong word, they're going to shackle me and put me in a back room.
Well, I don't like airplanes either, Mike, but, you know, I got to do this before I die. So.
It's like rigidity on the plane. I flew back from Miami the other day. I swear to God. God bless them. They were the nicest flight crew in the world. There was no water in the toilet. For 6 hours, the crew, you go in the bathroom, there's no water in the sink. I couldn't believe this. I said, wait a minute. If the crew that put water in the sink forgot to put water in the sink, maybe they forgot to put hydraulic fluid in the steering gear? I mean, what's going on here?
Well, I'm going to try to not keep those thoughts, Mike, and just...
No. I didn't mean to bum you out. Enjoy every minute of it. Take 3 10-milligram Valium and a bottle of red wine, and you'll be there before you know it.
Yeah. Thanks, Mike. I appreciate it.
Hey, God bless you. Tell me when you find Scungili over there. You better eat that Scungili before the global warming kills him, or before the Global Warming Committee eats him. One or the other. I don't know. It was quite a flight. It wasn't bad. I even had a meal. It was a sandwich in first class. Have you ever seen cuisine like this? I never saw anything like this. Like fifth grade school lunches in the Bronx in the 1950s were better than what's served as first class food. I mean, you've heard every joke in the world. It's unbelievable to me. I never saw anything like this. You pay through the nose. It's not an upgrade. And you have a choice between a roast beef sandwich that you wouldn't give to a prisoner, let's say, in Mississippi in the 50s wouldn't eat this. It's like congealed roast beef. I'm afraid to go to the bathroom on a plane for fear I'll be arrested. Like, let's say the bathroom's, like, busy, the middle one, and you're, like, afraid to go now to the front bathroom near the pilot's door. I'm afraid they think I'm a terrorist. I swear to God, it's like I don't want to sit next to a young child. She could say I touched her. You can get arrested just for sitting next to him. I don't want him near me. Get him away from me. Don't bring no kid near me. I don't want to know them. Don't even bring him near me. Don't put him in a chair next to me. Her mother could say I looked at her wrong. You could wind up in jail for 90 years. Same thing with the bathroom. They put it, like, who's always on those planes, 757s, they're right next to the pilot's locked door, right? So, like, if you go in that little, you know, channel there between the kitchen area and the pilot's door, you have to literally go in that alleyway toward the pilot's door to get into the toilet. At that point, my heart starts to race that, like, a marshal could jump up and hit me over that and take me to a chair. Because they thought I was going to the pilot's door. It's so crazy. No wonder the woman went nuts at the airport. It could happen to any of us. It's a sad story, that one. What happened to her? What do you think happened to that poor woman, Gottbaum? You know, I mean, I didn't even talk about that story, about the Gottbaum story. The woman, she was going to alcohol treatment, Arizona. Okay, she had trouble with drinking. That's not a crime. Millions of people do. So then, okay, so she goes nuts at the airport. She gets there late for the flight. She becomes hysterical, starts causing a disturbance. Why did they have to shackle her? I don't get that part of it. Can anyone explain to me why they had to treat her like that? What, was she an animal? Now, there was a problem, number one, in how they constrained her. She was not an animal. She was a distressed woman. They overreacted to do this to her. And what it did is it caused a panic in her. But, and here's a big but, the family was wrong, too. If she was A, suicidal, as they are saying, and B, going to treatment, they should have accompanied her, or the clinic should have sent an attendant to be with her. She never should have been on that plane alone. That's A. However, what happened to her is what frightens all of us at airports today. There's an overkill. She was a white middle-class woman who was obviously not a terrorist. They treated her as though she was one of the 19 hijackers about to take down the airport. They had no right to do that to her. There's something wrong with this picture. I don't know how she could have strangled herself. Truthfully, I can't figure it out. How could she have strangled herself in that room? Although I did see it. They cuff her behind the back. They shackle her feet like an animal. You hear, like an animal in a concentration camp.
You're listening to an encore broadcast of The Michael Savage Show.
Savage.
You're listening to an encore broadcast of The Michael Savage Show.
You know, when you talk about the enemy within, one could draw a very good comparison to the HIV virus, where a foreign virus invades a body and literally takes over a defense cell and duplicates itself inside the defense cell, and so then kills the body by destroying its ability to defend itself. It's almost identical to the Madeleine Albrights, who are now running around acting like they're our friends when in fact they're working for the enemy. So let's go to health for a minute. Of course, I talk every day about the health of a nation, but let's talk about the health of a body. Here's what Mark Twain said in Letters from the Earth. Disease, that is the main force, the diligent force, the devastating force. It attacks the infant the moment it is born. It furnishes it one malady after another, croup, measles, mumps, bowel troubles, teething pains, scarlet fever, and other childhood specialties. It chases the child into youth and furnishes it some specialties for that time of life. It chases the youth into maturity, maturity into age, and age into the grave. Mark Twain. And now I want to read you just one little entry that I wrote back in when it was published in 82 in Healing Children Naturally by yours truly on page 142 under chocolate. Now just listen to this, because many of you are chocolateholics and you've been told the chocolate's good, it contains antioxidants, and I can eat more chocolate, and I can even give it to Johnny in the morning. Let's give him some cocoa. That's what good old Doc Brown told me. Pay no attention to those quacks in the nutrition field. Give Johnny anything he wants to eat, because here's this little shiny pill called Ritalin. We call it medication, not a pill. And that medication will keep Johnny real, real stable. So here's what I wrote. Chocolate comes from the cacao tree, an evergreen of the Coca-Cola family. It does not contain caffeine, but it does contain another stimulant, theobromine, which has effects quite similar to those of caffeine. When used to make cocoa, the amount of theobromine present would be comparable to the caffeine in a cup of weak coffee or tea, approximately 30 milligrams. Of course, chocolate is also a saturated fat and high in calories, and when used in cocoa, it is usually sweetened with sugar. Now listen to the following few sentences, please. Copper is also abundant in chocolate and must be avoided by hyperactive children who often have low zinc and high copper levels. For the same reasons, we in the Savage home never use cocoa or hot chocolate for our children. They may seem innocent enough, but in fact are great nutritional time bombs filled with sucrose, bleaches, copper, artificial flavorings, and excess calories. Stick to warm milk flavored with carob powder and sweetened with honey, which makes a fine bedtime drink. Now, I've given you a lot of information there. I'm sure that the oafs in the media will say, oh, Bashaw, you give that child cocoa. Never mind what anyone says. After all, I went to high school, and I know about golf. What are you? Oh, you give him meat, and you give him chocolate. You give him whatever medication that good old doctor has you give him, because those doctors have the interests of your child at heart, and they know, all of them know what good medication is. Well, it's identical to the political situation. You going to believe in Dr. Baker? Dr. Baker has just given you a recipe for destroying the nation. That's what old Dr. James Baker has just prescribed. He may look like the doctor of yesteryear. You know, after all, he speaks like the old, good old American doctors. Tall, good-looking, speaks with a nice southern drawl, comes from a good law firm, great family. Well, he reminds me of the doctors that used to advertise Chesterfield cigarettes in the magazines of the 1930s. Exactly the same thing. They would have doctors say that I smoke Chesterfield for health because it's good for the T-zone. They were doctors, too. Well, now we have political doctors who are just like that doctor who used to sell Chesterfield. And the case before you is good old Dr. Baker. So if I've gone a little off topic, I've gone right back to topic, because that's how I do it. And that's the test of a good mind, is the ability to go far afield and come right back to the point that he's been trying to make all along. Now, I know if I keep up this health stuff, what's going to happen. I'll get a call. I'll say, Mike, I'm like that guy, that woman on the plane that had to bring matches on the plane the other day for flatulence. Mike, I asked, is there something I could take for so I don't have to take 10 books of matches on my next flight to Miami, Mike? What can I eat? Mike, while you're at on the thing for the matches, for the flatulence on the plane, can you give me something to make the down south part stand a little north? Point north like a compass needle, Mike. I don't want to like that Viagra stuff. It gives me a headache and I see blue. And while you're at it, Mike, I'm going to get the same thing. I don't want to do health. Please, no health cures. Maine, Susie, you're on the Savage Nation.
Hi, Dr. Savage. I just have a really quick question for you. I have a 16-year-old son. He goes to the gym two or three times a week, but he is overweight. I decided to take him to a nutritionist, and I just want to know what your opinion of nutritionists are they helpful? Can they make a difference?
Most of them are quacks, uneducated adults who know nothing. They have no credentials whatsoever, but they are selling you a bill of goods based on other people's work. Now, that doesn't mean there aren't an occasional nutritionist with real training and a real degree and really understand what they're talking about, but a lot of them are in it and don't really know what they're talking about. You have to look at their education. You have to look at their experience. You have to look at their certifications. Now, you may say, well, I'll go to an RD. They're even worse. The research dietitian degree is a complete reflection of the AMA principles of diet, which are totally toxic and know nothing about curing people through food. So I don't know what to recommend. Well, I do know what to recommend, actually. I would recommend that you go to a medical doctor who has a subspecialty in nutrition. That would be what I would recommend. There are some very good doctors around who have spent a lot of years studying nutrition, and that's where I would take my son. As far as weight loss, I mean, there's no mystery to it. You know, it takes self-control, and it takes controlling the diet. I don't know what you need to go to a doctor for that for. Do you?
No, actually, his medical doctor did recommend this nutritionist to him, so I think
Well, so you're working with a medical doctor who probably hasn't, but the problem is, who is the nutritionist? A lot of them are self-taught. They read three articles in Cosmopolitan, and suddenly they're a nutritionist, so you got to look into that. Thanks for the call. I have a show that could be called How Not to Make Friends and Influence People. But you got to think about it. How did people survive for eons without nutritionists? How did people survive for eons without going to these quacks and taking a Ritalin? How did your great-grandfather survive? How did they survive the Middle Ages eating shoe leather and they were still able to read and write? How is that possible that Western civilization was built before Ritalin was discovered by the quack establishment called the pharmaceutical medical establishment? How is it possible? There must have been people who were hyperactive then. There must have been, right? How did they deal with it? Everybody knows people like that. They didn't need drugs. They walked a lot. They talked a lot. But they somehow got through life without having to take a drug to turn it into a zombie. 1-800-449-8255. It's the parents who are behind ADHD. They're lazy and they're feeding the child junk food. 90% of the ADHD cases can be cured if the parents were educated as to how they're poisoning their child, number one, and how they're being lazy and not feeding the child properly. Much of this information is well established. It's been lost because the pharmaceutical and medical establishments want you to lose it, just as the political establishment wants you to forget history in order to manipulate you. It's the same exact thing. It's called the establishment. They control everything. Now, if you look at the control of the media by the few madmen who control it all, you'll find out, unfortunately, they also control the educational establishment through boards that they sit on. They also control the pharmaceutical establishment through boards. They sit on multiple boards. So the same power-mad lunatic who runs the media that tells you things about food that are untrue and tells you things about politics that are patently false will also be peddling you drugs that are unnecessary and peddling you diets that are clearly harmful. That's called interlocking corporate directorships. Check it out. It was once well established and well understood that interlocking corporate directorships would ultimately lead to the demise of the American. They were 100% right, and we're living through it now. I'm getting the calls right now, and I'll do them. Actually, this is fun. Beverly in Houston, Texas, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Hi, Dr. Savage. I wanted to ask you a question. Number one, can we still get that book about healing children?
It's an interesting question, wanting to and I told them I'd have to revise it. I did found a copy. I haven't revised it and put it out for the people. I'm not going to make any money on it, but I think it's so good. It is such an encyclopedia of great information. It should not be lost. It has a diet for prospective parents. In other words, you know that a lot of couples don't even understand that they have to think about diet while they're attempting conception? Did you know that as well?
That lady probably gave her son a donut for breakfast. I could probably
A donut probably and a cup of cocoa.
Ask you something, Dr. Savage.
Do you know that cancer is a leading cause of children's death? Did you know that? Did you know that one of the most suppressed statistics of our time is that more children under the age of 15 die of cancer, including leukemia, than of any other cause aside from accidents? Do you know why we don't hear about children dying of cancer? Do you know why we don't see children who are bald in the back rooms of hospitals? Because the AIDS racketeers have knocked up the entire sympathy racket. You are only allowed to hear about AIDS and the suffering of AIDS and relationship to AIDS and only AIDS victims and AIDS this and AIDS that. And the children are left behind dying in the back rooms of the hospitals because they don't have a voice to speak for them. That's one of the reasons I wrote this book.
What can women do for PMS? I went to a doctor.
Did you open up a very, very tragic subject, because there are things you can do. But I'm not about to give you medical information on this show at this time. I really only wanted to bring up this book because the ADHD came up as a break from the political discussion. But there are many things you can do for PMS. And I think, truthfully, and this is not a bad idea, if you go to one of these mega health food operations around, you know, like Whole Foods kind of thing, is there one near you?
Yes, sir. And I take a lot of vitamins and I eat salmon.
No, but listen to me. If you go there, you know, you can get an education unto itself. Now, some of it's quackery and some of it's hucksterism, but some of what you're going to read in some of those brochures is worth thinking about. I'll tell you where I'd begin today, Beverly, with anything. The Internet has become the great unifier of knowledge. Some of it's junk, but some of it's excellent. I would simply do a search on the PMS and health, and I would read as much as I could, and I would sift and I would sort. And then I would try to consult with a medical doctor, an MD, who definitely has training in nutrition. Don't just go to any old Joe Blow MD who knows nothing about nutrition. They need to have studied nutrition. They need to specialize in it along with their medical degree. And you're going to get some wonderful advice right there. But I'm not going to give any advice today on this subject.
Savage.
Matthew, you're up on the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
May I first start by saying thank God for Michael Savage. Finally.
Well, yeah, well, you have to thank someone. You may as well start with my mother and father and then go to God. Okay, thank you. And what's on your mind?
I finished burying my dog, the best dog of 13 years, in a local
wash. Oh, I'm sorry to hear it. Where'd you bury him?
I buried her in a wash nearby here in Tucson, Arizona.
You buried her where?
In a wash, a nearby wash amongst some mesquite and also some other trees.
And what happened?
Now, the point of my subject is that as I was burying her and filling in, and I had her son, her daughter, and her doggy husband in presence, this sheriff rolled up on a four-wheeler, and he asked what I was doing. And I told him. He proceeded to write me a ticket for burying my dog on public lands. And I'm calling to ask you, Mr. Savage, Dr. Savage, what kind of country are we living in where we are going to give someone a ticket for burying a beloved member of their family? Not a human being, mind you.
Well, according to the Drudge Report, which I've known for a while, one in every 32 adults in this country is either in prison, on probation, parole, or in jail. I have said on this show many times that we're living in a modified police state where anyone listening to this show is only one step, one accident, one mistake away from going to jail. We live in an overregulated, overpoliced nation where the middle class is increasingly under attack by too many regulations and too many people carrying guns. You are an example. I'm surprised the sheriff didn't call for backup and push your face into the ground, take your other dogs away and have them euthanized.
I'm surprised at that as well, Dr. Savage.
I'm surprised that the brave sheriff didn't call for backup the minute you asked him a question. Now, in my day, the policeman might have come by because his job is to stop when something like this is going on. You could have been burying your wife, for example, or something like that. I'm not trying to be funny. And he could have said, what are you doing? And he's like, okay, I'm burying my dog. And the policeman would have gone away and say, I'm sorry about it. And that would have been the end of it. Why he had to write you up is probably because he had to cover his own back. If he didn't write you up, somebody could have reported that they saw you burying a dog and this sheriff stopped and he didn't write you up. The sheriff could have lost his job. Why? You can blame the scum lawyers for doing that. I wouldn't even blame the sheriff. The scum lawyers who wrote the rules made the sheriff give you the ticket, by the way.
I'll tell you why it is, Dr. Savage. Because every local business within 100 miles of Tucson, Arizona, wants to charge minimum of $75 to $100 to dispose of.
Oh, I see. It's a business. You were burying your dog without a license. You violated the guild. The guild of dog barriers.
But he's got to make money off of my heart.
Oh, boy, oh, boy. Oh, boy, oh, boy. Oh, boy, oh, boy. What a world. In the old days, people buried their relatives in their backyard. You know, and I'm talking of a guy who had a large enough farm. They had a little graveyard up on the hill in their own homestead, and they put their ancestors there. They didn't have to go to anybody for it. But today, it's a different world today. I really don't know what to do, Matthew. When did you bury her?
About 2 hours ago.
So you're still in a state of shock. Well, go home and, you know, have a drink and play with your other dogs. What can you do, Matthew? What can you do about the way of all flesh, Matthew? What can you do about it? It's a pet. It's heartbreaking. They're better than people, many of them. We understand that. And they touch us when they go. But what can you do about the sequence called life? What can you do? Every story has a beginning, a middle, and an end. That story has come to an end in the physical plane, Matthew. But it has not come to an end in the spiritual plane. You understand that, of course, as well, don't you?
Yes, Dr. Savage, which is why I've written on the back of my van for the last 3 months in 12-inch letters, listen to the Savage Nation on KNST AM 790 from 4 to 7 p.m.
You're listening to an encore broadcast of the Michael Savage Show.
Savage.
You're listening to an encore broadcast of the Michael Savage Show.
Let's go to Chris now. Chris, what's on your mind? Go ahead, please.
Hey, Michael. This is Chris. I just wanted to let you know real quick. I met my girlfriend through you. You actually are responsible in a way. I've been dating her for 7 months now, through the MySpace, which, I mean, it's not, I don't, MySpace ain't the best thing in the world.
Wow. How did you meet your girlfriend through me and MySpace? What was the connection?
She was browsing around one night, and through a girl who I knew up here in New York. She actually lives in Florida, but actually just moved up here now. We've been together 7 months. I have a very patriotic page, and she saw my Michael Savage book that I had pasted online on my page itself. And she
wow, said, that's unbelievably great. You know, that's an idea. Why doesn't everyone listening who has some kind of MySpace page looking for someone put up a picture of my book in their hand? I'll bet you immediately it becomes a symbol of people who find each other. And do it with my blessing. I don't need to make any money from it. You know, that's as simple as any method of immediately defining yourself.
Absolutely.
What a great idea. So what, you had a picture of the book on the page. She saw it and figured that you're politically compatible, and the next thing you know, you're in love.
I had a picture of liberalism is a mental disorder up on there, and she was...
Well, you know something. It's A, it's true, but B, I guarantee you that when conservatives meet like this through a dating thing, they immediately have something to bond them, which is their shock stories of dating liberals over the years. You could talk for ages about that.
Oh, I know, Michael. We get very fired up. I mean, I love what you do because there's really no one out there with a mouth. I'm one with a mouth, I love to tell. I mean, I'm always out. Politics always come up, whether I'm at parties or whatever. And me and her are always going at it. You know, it's kind of funny.
Yeah. No, it's hard to do a day. It's hard to do a day and night, Chris. Glad you met a girlfriend through me with the MySpace and the book.
Savage.
Is it any wonder I talk to my dog at night? You know, at a certain point, you become speechless. You have to talk to an animal. My dog doesn't even bark, and I know what he wants. How do I know that? Why do I have such sensitivity? He looks at me, and I know what he wants. Looks at me one way, I know he wants water. Looks at me another way, I know he wants to go out and make. He looks at me another way, I know he wants to go to bed. He looks at me another way, I know he wants to jump off the bed. He looks at me another way, I know he wants you to rub his stomach. He looks at me another way, and I know he's... It's amazing to me. How does he know that I know just by looking at me? And he knows I'm a verbal guy. He listens to me on the radio. You know, he sees me working in front of a microphone. You'd think he'd be more verbal, but no, he can give me a look that petty.
You're listening to an encore broadcast of The Michael Savage Show.
Savage.